On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In January, the Marines called it Al-Qaeda propaganda. Now, almost in June, it's an American nightmare. An alleged massacre of civilians in the Iraqi insurgent hotbed of Haditha, 24 dead. An old man in a wheelchair, a begging father, mothers, children, girls aged 14, 10, 5, 3, and 1. The military's belated investigation of murder and cover-up is not complete, but Marine veteran Congressman John Murtha calls it killing in cold blood, worse than Abu Ghraib, another reason to leave Iraq, and now it certainly is used in Al-Qaeda propaganda. Up next on Point, the message in Haditha, U.S. troops under pressure, and should we stay or should we go? Joining me now from Washington is Michael Duffy, assistant managing editor for Time magazine. In March, Time was first to break the story of the killings in Haditha. Michael Duffy, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Let's just establish right off the bat, this was not a peaceful town. This was a real hotbed. Only 3 months before the alleged incident here, 20 U.S. soldiers killed in the space of 3 days.
Haditha has been in insurgents' hands, Tom, for nearly a year. It's a farming town in the Euphrates Valley, about 150 miles west, northwest of Baghdad. It was and is. It is not part of the country that has been, pacified. It's still very much contested.
We are told to expect charges coming out of military investigation, not too long from now. Maybe of murder, of dereliction of duty, of making false statements against several Marines. What is known about what happened on this day, Michael Duffy?
Well, some things are known and some things are in dispute, and that's probably what will get worked out if there is a trial, if there are charges. But on what was essentially a routine morning patrol back in November, a group of four Marine Humvees, essentially a company of Marines, began to take fire and saw an approaching vehicle approach its convoy at the same moment that an IED went off under the fourth vehicle in the convoy. And what began then was a five-hour incident. I don't know what to call it. It wasn't a firefight necessarily. After which 23 or 24 people died. The military believes some number of them were combatants. The investigation appears to be going a different way. It is clear that more than half were women and children, there is not any indication that we can find that there was any hostile fire following the IED going off, and that was before all but four of them had died. So it's a very ugly story, and while Congressman Murtha is the most outspoken about it, he's not alone. I mean, there are a lot of the people who have been briefed on Capitol Hill about this by the Marine Corps are quite upset about.
The Marines originally told you, a Marine spokesman in an email said, "I cannot believe you're buying any of this. This falls into the same category of Al-Qaeda in Iraq propaganda." It turns out there was something to look at here. What about the investigation of cover-up?
Well, I think there are two problems with Haditha. One is what actually happened there, the incidents, the shootings, the alleged murders. And then I think the second part of this investigation, in fact, there are two different probes going on now, is how the Marine Corps reacted to initial reports. They didn't exactly embrace the possibility of malfeasance or of murder. They, in fact, seemed to slough it off at first and then perhaps cover it up. That's already some higher Marine officers have been relieved of the duty. The unit itself is back in the United States and is not going back to Iraq. And then, of course, comes the more pointed investigation of the actual platoon that was on duty that day, who is in charge. We've learned over the years, at least people who study why soldiers snap in battle say that it's usually a lack of good, clear command and signals and leadership from the top, not just of the company, but also the individual platoon. That's usually where things go wrong. These are very tightly organized and tightly run units, and when something like this breaks down, it usually starts at the top.
We're waiting for the outcome of the investigation, but there's been a lot of reporting in the meantime from your magazine and others. What are eyewitnesses saying about what happened that day?
Well, there aren't many survivors. That's one of the problems, but those who who the few children who did survive were quite clear about what happened as the Marine platoon moved through a series of four houses that day following the explosion of the bomb outside the houses, which did kill one Marine. They essentially both by launching fragmentary grenades and then perhaps in individual shootings killed a series of men, women, and children who owned or lived in, mostly families, a series of four houses along this one road in Haditha. There is no indication that there was ever any hostile fire upon them during this this time out once the bomb had gone off. There, some of the people who were killed were killed while they were fleeing. Some the Marines apparently, allegedly assumed were part of a conspiracy to blow up the IED. That may now appear not to be the case. And it's a little hard to understand how a man who owned one of the houses was pleading in English for his life ended up getting shot, and then his wife and his four daughters, five daughters actually, ages 10, 5, 3, 1, and 14, all ended up dead.
Hard.
So it's a real big mess, obviously.
To say the very least. Michael Duffy in Washington, Assistant Managing Editor for Time Magazine. Michael, thanks for your magazine's work on this. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm joined now from Baghdad by Ellen Nickmeyer. She's Baghdad Bureau Chief for The Washington Post has been following up with reporting on Haditha. Ellen Nickmeyer, thank you for joining us. What have you heard from witnesses of what happened in November in Haditha?
Our people did talk to a witness who heard one of the men in the house pleading in English and saying, "I'm a friend, please don't kill me." There was one adult woman who survived, and the rest, like Michael said, were children. And they survived by playing dead, or they survived because they were already wounded and maybe they looked dead. I think there was one AK-47 found in one of the houses, and there's no one lately is saying that any of the other people had a gun anywhere near them when they were shot.
Ellen, from all reports, these were Marines under extreme pressure. A lot of them had done multiple tours in Iraq. At the same time, this is being called by human rights observers a massacre and compared to the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. You're there in Iraq, in Baghdad. How's it being received, understood by Iraqis, by U.S. Officers and troops, to the extent that you know?
One thing that maybe doesn't get through in our reporting all the time is that this one report isn't happening in a vacuum. There's steady reports. Civilians are the biggest casualties in this war and under fire from all sides. And the people in Iraq are used to hearing of civilians getting killed. Lots of times it's by insurgents. Lots of time it's by militias or government security forces. But there's also other allegations of, you know, of heavy civilian losses and airstrikes and other fighting on the part of the U.S. And the attitude, especially in Anbar, among public affairs officers, has been every time there's a civilian death alleged, that, like the email to Time Magazine said, that this is Al-Qaeda propaganda. These are doctors and other alleged witnesses lying to you because they're under pressure from insurgents. And they react to any kind of report of civilian death with dismissively, and there's generally not an investigation.
And now, after the reports from Haditha, still the same or different?
I guess the new ambassador to Iraq went to present his credentials yesterday in Washington, and he complained that he himself had a relative killed in a house search by U.S. forces, and he said he had taken it to the top commanders and U.S. commanders in Iraq, and he said he keeps being told that there are investigations going on, but he never hears results. I don't see it's true that the Marines are taking action in a couple of investigations now, that they're investigating at least, but I haven't seen any big turnaround in the response to reports of civilian casualties in general.
Ellen Nickmeyer, thank you for joining us. Let's hear a couple of voices on this. First of all, 12-year-old Safa Yunus. In a video obtained by CNN, she claimed that the U.S. Marines killed eight of her relatives and shot her.
A bomb exploded on the street outside. The American forces entered the house and started shooting with their guns. They killed my mother and my sister Noor. They killed her when they shot her in the head. She was only 15 years old. My other sister was shot with 7 bullets in the head. She was only 10 years old. And my brother Muhammad was hiding under the bed when the U.S. military hit him with the butt of a gun and they started shooting him under the bed. The U.S. military then shot me, and I was showered in blood. We couldn't leave the house because the U.S. military surrounded the area with a large number of soldiers.
The testimony of a 12-year-old in Iraq. In Washington, Republican Senator John Warner of Virginia, chairman of the Armed Services Committee, says Americans should not rush to judgment.
So a sense of calmness, I think, should be brought over this tragic situation that's developing in Iraq with regard to Marines. I respect my friend John Murtha. I also was privileged to wear the Marine uniform. And those of us who've had that opportunity are really heartfelt about this situation today. But we've got to let the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the investigation system, proceed before we reach any conclusions on this matter.
Senator John Warner in Washington. You can join us, 800-423-TALK. I'm joined right now from South Pomfret, Vermont, by William Arkin, military analyst. He writes the Early Warning blog on national and homeland security for the Washington Post. He was an Army intelligence analyst during the 1970s. Bill Arkin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
And joining us from Newport, Rhode Island, Colonel McCubbin Thomas Owens, contributing editor for the National Review Online, professor of national security affairs at the Naval War College. He led a Marine rifle platoon in Vietnam, 1968-1969. Colonel Owens, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Bill Arkin, first to you. How do you make sense of what went on in Haditha? Do you think we know what went on?
Well, I think that the human testimony and the observances of both those in the media and some soldiers who have come forward definitely indicates that there was a terrible incident that occurred that day. We certainly don't have all of the facts yet as to whether or not there were combatants in those four homes. And we certainly don't understand, and it's almost impossible to put ourselves into the shoes of the Marines who were there on that street on that day to understand why they snapped. And that's the point, Tom. Mm. They snapped. As Ellen Nickmeyer said, there are other incidents, hundreds, thousands, in which platoons come under fire or are come into contact with an IED, and they don't snap. And they don't because of leadership, because of character, because of command. There is a thin blue line that separates men in uniform from being an organized military force and being a mob. And on this day, in this place, if indeed the allegations prove true, then we see the ugly side of war. And I think to some degree it probably will be an incident that will be a turning point in public opinion regarding the American presence in Iraq.
Colonel Owens, Bill Arkin says they snapped. It's being described by human rights investigators as a war crime. How do you understand at this point what went on in Haditha?
Well, if the reports are right, it is a war crime. War is a terrible business, and especially the kind of war that these folks are being asked to fight, where your enemy doesn't clearly identify himself. He hides within the civilian population. He uses them as shields and the like. And there are too many, instances in which, of course, civilians are killed in the crossfire. But I think these people know they crossed a line if they, in fact, what amounts to a revenge killing in retaliation for the death of the one Marine that they basically then took it out on, what under the rules of law are considered to be non-combatants. These are people who were not involved, especially when you start talking about children and women. So, I think they're in a terrible position, but I'd reiterate what Bill just said, which is that there are thousands of times where things like this have happened, and where the individuals involved did not take the steps that these folks did.
That is where Marines were in awful situations and did not turn on civilians.
Correct. Yeah. As I anybody who's
anybody who's been in a combat situation knows that the, you know, there is this thin line between, you know, between civilization and barbarity. I mean, the fact is that we have rules of engagement, we have the laws of war, we have these sorts of things that people on the outside might say, well, what the heck do you have these things for? And the answer is to, as much as possible, to try to keep war as civilized as possible, because otherwise it can decline into barbarism. And I mean, that's what I think civilized states would prefer to do, is to avoid that sort of a situation.
We want to look at what this incident, and that seems a small word for it, but for now, says about the war. We're reading here from Lance Corporal Ryan Briones, one of the Marines who was there that day. He's back home in California now, having a hard time. He described to the Los Angeles Times, he said, they ranged the dead from little babies to adult males and females. I'll never be able to get that out of my head. I can still smell the blood. This left something in my head and heart. Bill Arkin, is this just war? These families would not like to see it that way. And are American soldiers being put in an impossible situation? That's essentially what John Murth is saying. They're in an impossible situation, and it's not right to leave them there. He says, bring the troops out of there.
Well, I also agree that U.S. forces should be withdrawn, because I haven't heard a convincing argument as to what progress it is that they are actually making on the ground. But having said that, I do think that it's a bit of a red herring to say that U.S. forces are fatigued or somehow that the conditions on the ground go to explain what happened here. First of all, okay, we've heard a lot in the news media that these guys were on their second or third tours and that they're somehow fatigued. And I think that's a red herring, because anything that might be a negative associated with that, their frustration or anger in being back in Iraq, is probably more than compensated by their knowledge of the country and the geography and their combat experience. Second, I think that to sort of say, oh, this is a particular kind of war and this type of incident is more prevalent, I think also ignores the broader strategic question as to whether or not, given that this is a particular kind of war, that we actually have some prospect of victory. And I think that that's where the American people themselves are a bit confused now. Every month that goes by is the same amount of American deaths, plus or minus. Every month that goes by, there seems to be a larger number of Iraqi civilians that are being killed, which means that we are failing to secure and safeguard that civilian population.
But is there a link between that ongoing difficulty, to say the least, of this war and what happened in Haditha? I mean, you write on your blog, right now we should be honest with ourselves and admit the hopelessness of our endeavor and the impossible situation we have created for our soldiers. You're saying this morning, today, that there's no excuse for this, and yet is there not a situation created here, a connection between the strategic and the specifics of this situation?
Well, to be honest with your listeners, Tom, I was writing that before Haditha. So the truth of the matter is that I also thought it was a hopeless endeavor before. Haditha may be a turning point. It may come to symbolize the frustration and the impossibility that we are putting our soldiers and Marines in on the ground. But again, at the same time, it's not what the U.S. military is doing. It is the exception. And I'm more interested in focusing, Tom, on what the U.S. military is doing, the positive things that it's doing, because I just don't see at this point that it is enough to actually achieve whatever victory it is that the American government wants to achieve.
Listeners, we're at 1-800-423-8255. What do you see as the message in Haditha? And Iraq vets in particular, what do you make of this story? 800-423-TALK. Colonel Owens, you have noted that this is a kind of gift to an insurgent. This is what insurgencies want, the deaths of civilians that they can make much of. In that respect, this is a setback. This becomes propaganda in the holster of the enemy.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the danger of this sort of thing. And I mean, look, it's very clear. I just read something this morning, early this morning, that indicated that, you know, that so many people in Iraq believe that if we do this as a regular basis, this may not have the kind of propaganda effect that some people here are thinking.
Because you think Iraqis are so inured to it?
Well, that's part of it. Of course, as I said before, this is a crossing of the line. This is something that, it's the difference between My Lai and some of the other things that happened in Vietnam. And that's why I think that it's important to make it clear that this is a very unique and very distinct sort of a violation. It's not the sort of thing that goes on all the time. Insurgencies are more difficult in terms of the fact that you don't have the wonderful situation where your enemy is taking you on in the open or wherever. It's urban warfare, it's which is dangerous itself. And you're dealing with an enemy, I said before, that is hiding within the population. There is lots of pressure on folks like this. But, you know, I once more agree with Bill on the fact that, these sorts of things that you like this are more likely to be committed by green troops. It wasn't the snapping. It was something, it wasn't the fact that they'd been back time and time again. It was the fact that for whatever reason they did snap. And so, again, I attribute it to a problem with leadership or something else. I mean, I think this is probably a localized incident. It doesn't excuse it, but it just, once again, puts it into some context.
Maybe green troops, maybe not. We're told that they'd been back a number of times.
No, I'm not saying these were green troops. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that that's characteristic of green troops. It, in other words, the more veteran troops are less likely to snap, it would seem.
Though maybe not this time. Bill Arkin, on your blog, you've got the mother of a vet in Iraq saying, in response to your column, these troops are being thrown back again and again without proper, psychological healing in between, that they're stretched to the limit. You write that you hear from military sources and you suspect yourself it's true that what happened in Haditha that day has happened more times than the Marines and Pentagon would like to admit. You write, I suspect in this impossible war there are hundreds of incidents of accidental and intentional killings of civilians that have gone by without an investigation of any sort. Do we have a coarsening, a degradation of American military standards in this cauldron of Iraq, Bill?
Yes and no. Tom, I think the problem in Iraq is that civilians are in the crossfire. That is the undeniable reality of that conflict. And they are in the crossfire, as Colonel Owens has said, because the enemy doesn't wear a uniform and doesn't engage the United States military on a battlefield. Having said that, I do think that my experience as an observer in Iraq and Afghanistan is that there is a sense that Iraqi civilian casualties are not accepted but to be expected. And because they are expected, I just wonder whether there isn't a presumption that in these IED-type incidents or in firefights that there are going to be some civilians who are going to die, and that perhaps when that occurs, it's not seen as an extraordinary incident but seen as routine.
Boy,
now, again,
I, yeah.
None of that is to excuse what happened here, Tom.
Yeah.
It's merely to say that you create a different environment over a long period of time in which the expectation of civilian casualties because of urban warfare, because of the nature of the insurgency, because of the use of IEDs, changes the way you might look at an incident and changes the way in which you might reconstruct it to say, well, okay, so in this particular case, one American died and 24 Iraqis died. That is not uncharacteristic of other occasions and other incidents in other places.
I'm not sure that's the way the world or Americans or ultimately Iraqis are going to look at this, but we feel the kind of bloodbath around that might lean in that direction. Anthony's calling from Eugene, Oregon. Hi, Anthony. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, from the very beginning, just because my intuition from the very beginning, now it's just playing out, it's a disaster. I know that. Now, the question, what I want to put back to the colonel and to some, whoever is a proponent for this war is, let's ask them to explain to us, what is their end result? What are they trying to achieve there? Is it, my intuition tells me that it's just to cause as much disruption and chaos and to just basically strong arm an entire country to essentially deter any other future countries from, you know, trying what happened, unfortunately, on 9/11. If that's the case, let the colonels and the people up on top, let them tell us up front that that's what's going on here. Because as far as I'm concerned, it couldn't be anything but that with the daily casualties and chaos that you hear about.
Anthony, let us pick it up. Colonel Owens, what about it? Vice President Dick Cheney said 1 year ago yesterday that the insurgency was in its last throes. That is clearly untrue. The military reporting now that, you know, it's at its highest level since they started keeping track of this. So where are we headed here? And is the fog of goal part of what may be leading U.S. soldiers astray?
I don't think they're being led astray. I think this was an incident in a war. It crossed the line from the sort of things that Bill was talking about before with the, being folks caught in the crosshair.
It looks pretty far astray to me, and Bill Arkin says it may have happened hundreds of times.
Well, he may be right, but he may be wrong, too. I mean, the people I teach here are all veterans. They've been two or three times. And so I have a pretty good sense, basically, of, you know, at least what they believe. And I think that, you know, if you talk to the folks who have been there time after time, you'll get different views from different folks.
John's calling from Marion, Iowa. John, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm a former Marine, and I'm not apologizing for the actions of the Marines, but I want to put this alleged incident in context.
Mm-hmm.
These young Marines, we put them in a very hot, dangerous situation, and I don't know what happened yet. We haven't had that investigation, but the president, or any president, gets to sit coolly in the Oval Office and kill thousands, tens of thousands of civilians. And we reward them with second terms or the praises of being a hero. And you can think of Bush, or you could think of Roosevelt with Dresden and Hamburg in Germany and killing all those civilians.
So what do you make of that? Are you then forgiving the Marines who may have done this? Are you saying responsibility goes higher? Where do you take that, John?
Responsibility goes much higher. If you put people in bad situations, you have to accept bad things are going to happen. And the leadership is the people who put these young, courageous men in harm's way, and it happens. And no one wants it to happen. We certainly have to have an investigation, but the chain of command, it's who's responsible for these events, it has to go up. Of course, it won't. It never has, but it just kind of the context of that, the actions of individuals have become war criminals, and the actions of
Elected officials, something else. John, we've got it. And yet there is that thin line out there on that rough edge. Dave's calling from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Dave, how do you see it?
Well, it's always kind of a shock when you hear professional soldiers and people who are paid to comment on the military talk about the military, because they speak about it in such direct terms. But the fact of the matter is these are ordinary men and women who are out there fighting the war. They are trained and taught that they are the baddest, biggest killing force on the planet, and that's what they're there to do. And it is absolute foolishness to imagine that given an opportunity, a young man from perhaps a rural background comes out and he's got the power of life and death over another human being. And every 20 years or so, we seem so shocked when something like this happens, when these guys actually go out and kill somebody, especially in a case like this where the enemy is not wearing a uniform.
Well, they're supposed to kill the enemy. That's what they're there for. But 5-year-old girls, 3-year-old girls, a 1-year-old girl?
But the point is, these are young men with guns, and to call them anything else, heroes, proud Marines, whatever other package you want to put them on, these are young men with guns. Now, I want you for a minute.
Not all young men with guns kill babies. What does it tell you about the war itself, Dave?
If you give a young man a gun and you put him in a situation where he gets to make the decision on whether somebody else's life lives or dies, a lot of them will make the decision to kill him.
Well, this is clearly over the line. What does it tell you about the war?
Well, have you heard of no gun re? My lie, it happens in every war. It tells me not so much about the war. It tells me about opportunistic young men with guns. It tells me about the foolishness of old men who send them out there to do noble tasks when the result is inevitable.
Dave, we've got it, and we appreciate your call. Let me get a call from Washington, D.C. Sean is on the line. Hi, Sean. You're on the air.
Yes, how are you?
We're well. What do you think, Sean?
Well, my point is that I made with the when the call was taken is that from the beginning of this war, similar to the Vietnam War, there's been a constant lack of support for the military for their mission, for the work that they do, and we bombard them in the media with criticism and second-guessing that I think has created a situation in Iraq where the insurgents realize we don't support our own military.
24 civilians dead, including children. What should the American civilian response be?
Well, I'm looking at the bigger picture that created maybe that. I'm trying to look at the mm-hmm. force, not just the individual tree. What I'm saying is that you have young Marines or young military servicemen in Iraq serving their country, and the country doesn't appear to be supporting those individuals. And
I think they've supported the troops there a lot, but at this point...
I disagree.
Well, I mean, the yellow ribbons were certainly everywhere. The war protests have not been anywhere near the scale of Vietnam. But let me ask you, at this point, what does support...
The media constantly bombards the military with criticism in every way, shape, and form.
What should happen when there's a massacre of 24 civilians, if that's what it was?
We're talking about over the three-year history of this conflict. The media has done nothing to support the military or create a winning atmosphere, a winning situation where they can feel supported in the work that they do.
Well, I don't know. I think the media say again and again, let's listen. We've had an election. We've had this. We've had that. Vice President Cheney told Larry King a year ago, insurgency's in its last throes. People wanted to believe that. Mac Owens, how do you see the role of the media here? We've got a massacre on the table today, but has the media been unsupportive? Where's the problem here?
Well, I mean, I think the best performance of the media was on the move up to Baghdad when they were embedded. I think there's been a problem since that time because much of the information that we get is a result not of necessarily folks being out there, but of relying on Iraqi stringers and so forth.
But we're looking at the U.S. military itself yesterday with its new report saying the insurgency is hotter than ever. I mean, what's the media got to do with that?
No, there's no question about it. You asked me about the media.
Yes.
Trying to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have done, in some places they've done a very good job, and some places they've done a negative job. One of the things that has been, has been annoying is the fact that the first thing that leads are American casualties. I've often thought, what would have happened if you'd had this, the American press on Omaha Beach on the first day at Normandy? What the leads would have been there, and the stories would have been about, the tremendous casualties that had been suffered by the United States without much progress.
But isn't that because there's a question about the very presence there and the strategy? Frank says it doesn't matter so much if it's 2,400 U.S. casualties or 24,000 or 240,000, maybe Americans aren't so prepared to stand up and salute because it's not clear what's going on there.
Well, of course, I don't think the press has helped with that either. My point is I think the press has been generally, in terms of the coverage and so forth, they've done a reasonable job in a lot of mm-hmm. respects, but not so hot in some of the others. I think certainly it should be clear to our adversaries and has been that the focus of their effort, what Clausewitz calls the center of gravity, is the will of the American people, and certainly that's influenced by the reports that come back, the things that people look at.
But these are the facts, at least the facts as we know them today. Let me get a call from Beaufort, South Carolina. Colin is on the line. Hi, Colin. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for hearing me. There are obvious implications internationally for such an incident like Haditha. I was wondering what you guys think that the U.S. government is going to do to help quell any tensions that might arise internationally because of a war that was never supported to begin with and now is starting to turn so sour so quickly.
How
are we going to handle that?
Do you think global disapproval will be even high? I mean, it's pretty high already. Do you think Haditha will shoot it up higher?
I think there can be nothing done positive out of an incident like this, and I think surely that the response is going to get even more negative over the next few months, yes.
Bill Arkin, what about it? The U.S., whatever Iraqis think of it, in the maelstrom there, this doesn't look good at home. It doesn't look good around the world. Mac Owen says, it's about maintaining domestic support. How do you see this hitting American support for the war?
Well, I think domestic support for the war in Iraq could be sustained on the basis of two possibilities. One would be assurances on the part of the administration, backed up by some kind of fact, that the United States is making progress in the war and that it can show that progress through some set of metrics or some set of engagements that would indicate that we are controlling more territory or
but at the moment it looks
insurgents,
the opposite, does it not? Doesn't it?
Absolutely. And so that's why I generally reject the notion that the media somehow is a culpable party here. We report what it is we can see about the war, and what we see doesn't seem to be very positive. The other element of American support for the war is whether or not they have a sense that the administration is giving our soldiers all of the tools that they need to be successful. And my sense is that the American public is coming to the conclusion that the soldiers aren't getting the tools that they need.
We talk about armor and armored vehicles.
Not just tools in a physical sense, Tom, but also the support that's required. Are there sufficient number of troops on the ground? Do we have the right strategy? And the truth of the matter is that since about September of last year, when the President of the United States announced his strategy for victory in Iraq, this administration's policy has been that we are there until the Iraqi government asks us to leave. And that means that we are no longer there to defeat terrorists or defeat an insurgency. We are there to hold the line until these people are ready to take care of their own security. And I think because we transitioned to this sort of holding of the line, we at the same time intrinsically robbed our soldiers and our military of the tools they need to be successful because they're essentially holding their breath, waiting for the Iraqis to tell us that, that they no longer need our help.
And we've got American soldiers now allegedly involved in a massacre, and I'm reading here just 300 meters from their base in Haditha. I mean, this is like right outside the gate.
Well, it is right outside the gate, Tom, but again, those Marines don't control the territory of Haditha. They don't control the town.
Clearly.
They have a base within the town, but they're a garrisoned force, and they go out on patrols. And we don't have a sufficient number of forces on the ground to control territory. And that is part of the problem of not providing our troops with sufficient tools in order to be successful. Mm. Look, Tom, it'll be a great day for America when the Baghdad government says get out. It'll be the only way in which we can do so and maintain our dignity and honor and credibility. But the truth of the matter is I wish that that day would come sooner than later.
Of course, when they say get out, that may or may not be mean a stable Iraq will follow. Mary's calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi. What do you think, Mary?
I'm horrified by these allegations, and I believe them, and I'm thankful that we have journalists that could carry this message to us. And I think Rumsfeld should be forced to resign. I think he should be forced into retirement in Baghdad. I think it's horrible. I think it's been a mess from the beginning. I think it was all ill-advised. And if people are confused about supporting the military, I don't think anybody understands why they're there. And so many people are dying. There's so much brutality. I think the fallout for the people that have been serving there is just going to be incredibly high. I think it's a stressful, horrible situation.
Do you think responsibility for Haditha should go up the chain of command, and how high?
Absolutely, to Rumsfeld.
Why?
Because he saw the red flags from the beginning. The people parading prisoners around in underwear and sticking dogs on them and finding bodies photographed. I mean, those were all red flags that something was wrong, that there wasn't cohesive leadership, that people are confused, that it was supposed to be kind of a quick battle. I think that's what Bush thought it was going to be, and it turned out to be this lengthy, we're going on 3 years now, just horrible mess. And I think all the signs have been there, and I think it's horrible, and I feel very, my heart aches for the military and their families, and it's just, we can see the signs, it's a mess.
Mary, we've got it, and we appreciate your call. Mac Owens, what about command responsibility here? There are allegations of cover-up. We're told that will be among the charges likely to come out soon. How high do you see responsibility going here? And is there some kind of signal from the very top that somehow filters down and results in Abu Ghraib and now Haditha?
I've never bought that at all. I I think, you know, if again, we're talking about allegations, we haven't seen the full report, but if it turns out there is a cover-up, then, of course, the people that, you know, have done the covering up will have to be held accountable. Look, I mean, the problem with several of the callers talking about, you know, the president sending people to war and the like, I mean, that's unfortunately the way wars are done. It's the way World War II was done. It's the way the Civil War was done and these sorts of things. But it's clear that, again, you can point to the policy, the overarching policy. You can criticize that or not. But to come back to the specific situation here, there's nothing from the policy that leads to specifically to this incident. In other words, this is an incident that occurs within the broader picture. I think that it was, again, unique in the sense, not that it hasn't happened before and won't happen again, and as Bill says, there are probably other instances like this.
Not that unique, then.
But, well, in the sense that it's not driven by policy. I go back to Vietnam. Okay, I was in Vietnam, led an infantry platoon for 9 months, never saw, never observed an atrocity, and yet when I came back, I found that that's what people thought about Vietnam. And there was clearly me lie, there was, and we know there were others. I've written a lot on this over the last couple of years.
And there was an insurgency, and the U.S. ultimately left from the embassy rooftop. Our time grows short. Bill Arkin, how do you see this playing out? How high up the chain of command do you see responsibility going here? And is this a sign that the U.S. has to dig in and get used to bloody insurgency for years, or that it needs to get out?
Well, I think, Tom, that your listeners should be somehow made to feel better that there already is accountability. The battalion commander here has already been relieved of his command.
Only after it came out in the media.
Mm-hmm. He has been relieved of his command, Tom. Mm-hmm. The truth of the matter is that there is accountability. Now, do we want Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld to be held accountable for his miscalculations and misjudgments associated with the Iraq War? Well, I guess he will be in history. But the reality is that when somebody commits murder, if these Marines indeed did do that, they will be sent to jail, but their mothers are not sent to jail. And so the idea that somehow when someone commits murder that all the way up the chain of command everybody goes to jail, I think is wrong. The question does come down to, were they adequately trained? Were they adequately prepared? Were they readied for the war? Look, we'll find out in the end, Tom, but I think for right now, the incidents at Haditha are ugly enough and the Marines should be held accountable. It's a separate question as to whether or not the Bush administration understands the tragedy of Iraq.
With that, we're out of time. I'm not ready to put mothers quite in the chain of command yet, but we take your bigger point. Bill Arkin with the Washington Post Early Warning Blog, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Colonel McCubbin Thomas Owens at the Naval War College, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.